Welcome back to Module 3, and we're here at Lesson 15, Part 2 of How to Lobby at Intergovernmental Meetings. This is something that Kofi Annan said. He was the 7th UN Secretary General, and this was back in, I think it was 1998, perhaps in Brazil. He was reminding the NGO community at that time that a strong civil society promotes responsible citizenship and makes democratic forms of government work. A weak civil society supports authoritarian rule, which keeps society weak. It's important to add that perspective into whatever degree of involvement you may end up having, either as an individual or as an NGO, because the engagement in the process and the sustained engagement in the process is also one of the ways that we do as civil society actually contribute to the larger strength of our nations and the world. It's not an obvious way that this is done. Nobody will recognize you or pay much attention to that, but that is one of the side benefits, you could say, that comes from participating in intergovernmental work at the international level. Now, this time we're going to be looking at why participate in the intergovernmental meetings, how to participate, how to be effective, some of the practical issues, resources, and the commissions and conferences. Again, I will provide those links at the end. So why participate? Not everybody who goes to the international intergovernmental meetings are going there to lobby, but clearly that is one obvious reason. They have a very specific agenda, they have a specific perspective, and they want to bring that into the discussions, the dialogue, and possibly the resolutions or outcomes of that particular commission, conference, or meeting. Some participate in order to learn more clearly and precisely how the international process works. First time that an individual goes to an international conference, that's part of what is going on. And some may very intentionally go to one or two or a series of conferences specifically to learn how the international process works for themselves, not just to read it out of a book or to hear from other people. Others go there to work particularly with the stakeholders. If it is perhaps the Indigenous Forum, some go there in order to network and work with very specifically with other stakeholders from all around the world to develop relationships and potentially to multiply their capacity for impact in future times. Others go there because they feel they have very important information they want to exchange and or to be able to learn from other NGOs and stakeholders and the governments, because all of those have information and perspectives and usually put together packets of information, resources and materials, and it's an excellent place to find out what is going on and what the different segments of society and of the global community, what information they have, what perspectives they have, and how they are approaching the specific topic. Some go there in order to organize side events or ancillary meetings. Different commissions or conferences historically have drawn upon the NGO community to varying degrees. For example, in the Crime Congress, traditionally because many of the experts, the lawyers, the judges, the police, are not necessarily government officials. They're not usually part of the government. They are part of civil society, and they are the experts. So it's historically barely accurate to say that, for example, the Crime Commission has relied upon the side events for getting information, useful information, innovative approaches to different areas. And the UN's handbook on restorative justice, for example, came out of just this kind of initiative from civil society. So the organizing of events, letting people know about them, producing outcome materials, circulating those things are an important part of intergovernmental processes. But again, it has to have to understand that at intergovernmental meetings, these are considered quote-unquote side events. They're considered ancillary to the main efforts that are going on, usually to make some kind of agreement on a particular topic going forward as governments. What these meetings are not, they really are not a substitute for working at the local level. And in fact, the strength of your ability to work at the global level, at the international level, usually draws upon the local accomplishments. So some of the preparation that is good for you to do is to connect with your local chapters. Make sure that you have the full information of your organization about that which is being done, promising practices, key activities and programs that can be highlighted in the international environment. So it's not just a matter of an NGO or a stakeholder group going to the meeting in order to push forward a particular policy or objective, but to be able to bring to the international level specific success stories. Promising practices are key, given that one of the ways of looking at the United Nations and intergovernmental organizations are that they are marketplaces of ideas. Therefore, when groups come not just with a clear idea, a specific proposal, or a philosophical, moral, ethical reason for doing something, but they can bring with them proof that in certain environments, locations, and circumstances that what you are proposing works and works well, that speaks loudly. So again, the international conferences are not a substitute for working at the local level. They're not funded by the United Nations. So organizations and individuals must do a cost-benefit analysis prior to coming. Sometimes your if it's important enough for your organization, then they may send representatives. Other times organizations will allow their individuals who decide that this is important enough for them or important enough agenda for them as an individual to foot the bill themselves and to make the effort to go there. In these situations, you still have to make sure, going back to connecting with your NGO, you have to make sure that the position that you take at these conferences can fully represent your organization's position, even though they may not be footing the bill, in order that you have the weight of your organization behind you and that you do in fact speak for the organization and not just for your own interests at that event. Now, how to participate? You can organize stakeholder office holder meetings. In other words, you as NGOs and or typical stakeholders, and you may be an individual or you may be working with an issue caucus of NGOs or other stakeholder groups, you can plan to meet with those in the governments, or in the, you know, if it's, say, you're working with on CSW, the Commission on the Status of Women, you can plan to meet with those who work in the commission, those who hold offices in the commission. You can request to set those meetings up ahead of time. Again, this becomes part of your planning and preparation process. Another way to participate is to create alliances within and between stakeholder groups and the governments. So you can go there not just to meet the individuals in order to lobby a particular perspective, but you can go there in order to create alliances. So here, again, you have to know your objectives. You have to be prepared to listen to all sides and decide who you can work best with as you're, you know, gathering these groups of people together. You can go there in order to participate and to, if you've already got those alliances, you can go there as part of an alliance, or you, in fact, you can go there in order to help form, for the purposes of the time, alliances and within and between the stakeholder groups, and in many cases with governments. Again, you have to do your research. You have to find out which governments hold which position, what their agenda is. In short, if you and a particular government have a similar position on a given issue, whether it's your government or not, you can work with them. You can create an ally. And these alliances can continue to work through the functioning commissions or various programs and funds down the road I just put some of the commissions in here, the Commission on Sustainable Development, the Commission on the Status of Women, the Commission on Human Rights, on Population and Development, or on Social Development. You can be planning to work with those commissions further down the road in the coming days, weeks, months. And so one of the ways you go there to participate is with that intent in mind. You can go there also as a stakeholder on a delegation. That, of course, either requires that you have connections with the government or that you have done the work ahead of time to find out whether that government takes stakeholders or not on their as part of the delegation, understand what the process is to be even considered, and made the effort in order to be considered to be part of the delegation. And in some cases, you may be willing to do this 1 year, recognizing that you may not be chosen, but that it will get you into the funnel for consideration in the future. As we shift on into looking at the different groups that are often involved in intergovernmental meetings, and this will not be exhaustive, I hope that can stimulate some thinking and that you can begin to see, to look out for these kinds of groupings and lobbying opportunities that you just may not have seen in the past. As I just noted, the groups that we'll mention here are not exhaustive, especially when we're talking about the major intergovernmental groups, but some of the key grouping areas are ones that you may consider, freshly consider, as connections and connecting points and allies in different aspects of your work. Now, there's usually a bureau of the meeting, those who are tasked with organizing, setting up the agendas, making sure that they have the moderators and the coordination of the schedule is done, representing the face of that particular commission or conference. They have that bureau as a group of people that you can find out who they are in advance, and where appropriate, and request a meeting. Now, I did this back in 2005 at an international conference on the Small Island Developing States in Mauritius, January of 2005. I was there representing our organization, and for a short while, the head of our international organization came through and did attend very briefly. And so we set up a meeting with the Secretary General of this international meeting, Ambassador Anwarul Chowdhury. And you can see him here on the right of this photograph next to the then Secretary General Kofi Annan. So what was the benefit of doing this? Well, it helped on a number of different levels, but I'll just mention a couple of them. First of all, it showed that we not only had the interest in this area of work, but the fact that we showed up with a small delegation there in Mauritius, it indicated that we had some level of capacity to act. During the meeting, we also had the opportunity to propose some steps forward. And without going into all of them, one of the proposals resulted in us providing a publication that was focused on development at the time that ended up in the packet of every head of delegation that came to the 2006 General Assembly. Now, that was important to us at that time because that organization was focused on education. And so having that opportunity to provide that kind of information to senior diplomats and global world-level leaders was perceived to be valuable at that time. One more little tip here. I'm not going to belabor the point, but endeavoring to meet people at these regional conferences is a very good idea because you'll have access to them that you cannot so easily get in UN headquarters or any of the other traditional places of their work. So I would urge you that if you are in a regional conference, or a smaller commission or something, make your effort there rather than focusing just at UN headquarters under standard procedures. Now back to going through these varieties of groups. And I do encourage you just to think of creative ways that you might be able to tap into the resources that are within each. Each conference, commission, gathering, event usually has a secretariat. They supply all the support and logistics for the event. And they're the ones who know exactly what's going on and where it's going on and when. So if you know where to find them, and if you pay them a little attention and take care of them, then when you really need to find out some information about the logistics of the conference really quickly, they'll be right there to help you. There are relevant UN offices and divisions beyond the Secretariat. For example, the Commission on Sustainable Development, you've got many different areas of the United Nations that deal with sustainable development issues. That means that in advance you can make connections with others in those offices and divisions, which can be useful to you, again, according to your longer-term agenda and plan. There are also key governments in any process. Depending on what the focus of the commission or meeting is, there are certain governments that are more central to the process at that time, and possibly even according to the agenda for the meeting, there are key governments. Do the work ahead of time, you identify those, you begin to find out ways in which you can identify the representatives of those governments, where they will be, where they will stay, and anything that you can, and again, they're another group that you can focus on. Now I want to list some of the major intergovernmental groups that may play a role in the meetings, and again, this is case by case, meeting by meeting, and region by region. But just to mention a few of them, there's the Group of 77 in China, which of course is, I'm not quite sure how many countries it is at the moment, but it's closer to actually 100 countries in that group. There's the European Union, there's the African Union, you've got the Organization of Islamic Conference, which is roughly about, I think it's still about 50 some countries that are part of that group. You've got the JUSSCANNZ. Now, they don't necessarily lobby as a solid unified front, but as a group, they can be useful to target in some cases, and I think I listed a little bit later on in this, precisely because the nations in this group tend to operate independently, and so they can be useful for particular lobbying efforts. The Non-Aligned Movement. Again, that's kind of come and gone in terms of its effectiveness since the end of the Cold War. It has somewhat lost its punch because a lot of what pulled it together was the Cold War and many of the countries that did not want to be aligned, particularly East or West. But nevertheless, they do still meet on some issues. They are a group to identify, be aware of, and to notice. Now getting down to some of the practical things about how to attend. For the UN conferences and for regional intergovernmental meetings, it's a different matter, and you have to find out from the secretariat of those intergovernmental meetings what their particular situations are. But for the United Nations, of course, having ECOSOC accreditation is the simplest way to attend, but you still do need to register with the conference. Now, in the last year, the NGO office of the Department of Economic and Social Affairs has simplified the process of becoming accredited with conferences and meetings, and that can be done through a very simple online process now. But for some of the less well-known meetings or less attended by NGO meetings, and there are still many of those, you still do need to make sure that you have at least informed the UN that you're intending to participate about at least 3 weeks in advance, just as a rule of thumb, to make sure that you're registered and to therefore be able to get in, or at the very least, to get in without any hassle. Even without ECOSOC accreditation, you can seek accreditation to a particular international conference or commission meeting. And so then you have to go to the secretariat and or the contact person and do this plenty of time in advance and make sure that you have gone through the process that they require for accreditation and allow yourself the time to do that. Sometimes UN machinery doesn't always work quickly overnight, so make sure that you allow yourself plenty of time. And be aware that even if you are accredited to a particular intergovernmental meeting, once that meeting has come and gone, then if you don't have ECOSOC status, you will have to reapply at the next meeting that you wish to attend. However, that being said, if you have sought accreditation to individual commissions or program meetings as you maybe consider applying for ECOSOC status or for other meeting accreditation, that is helpful if you can show that you have participated in the past. Another way, again, is to get included as a national, as part of a national delegation, as an expert or a stakeholder representative. Now, for any of these things, always make sure that you bring copies of any letters that have come and gone between the secretariat of the meeting and yourself, and those between your NGO headquarters, because you need to be able to show that you are an authorized representative of your NGO or your organization, and any of the letters that have gone between your organization and the secretariat. It's just always, don't expect them to keep track of the paperwork. You're better off putting your own little file of that together and making sure that you bring that with you to help smooth any possible problems at the time of registration and getting your pass, etc., for the conference. How to be effective. Many points, little points here, some important, some are just ideas. But again, I cannot underscore enough, prepare in advance. Know your objectives. Begin to find out who your governmental reps may be. But, you know, also know that many times governments, the delegates, will often change throughout the course of the meeting. And just because you made a relationship with one during the first couple of days or the first day does not necessarily mean that they're going to be there for the full duration of the meeting. So when you do speak with them, and if it's a very key and important area to you, make sure that you do find out who their follow-up persons are and if they would introduce you to them, that kind of thing. Put together photos of key players, or at least those that your organizations consider key players, so that you can identify them. There are a lot of faces, a lot of people milling around in these conferences, some of them enormous numbers of people. And if you can identify them by sight, because you can't just go around looking at everybody's badges. So I would strongly encourage you to at least put together a small file of the photographs and names and titles of the key people that you really wish to meet while you're there. That gives you a place to focus, it gives you clarity, and it gives you the edge because you know who you're looking for. Attend NGO organizational meetings in advance and during the time of the commission or the conference. Usually, NGOs will have some kind of an organizational meeting just as a place to meet one another. And there's usually a room designated for NGOs to do that. So do go to those locations, make connections, find out what's going on, and you can make many great connections even there. Plan side events with other stakeholders or NGOs, either NGO issue caucuses or whomever. The most effective ones are through a small coalition of organizations. Because again, just put yourself in the shoes of the governmental representatives. You see one NGO doing an event, or you see a group of NGOs doing an event. It makes simple sense to them that they would go to the one where more NGOs, more representative groups are present and cooperating together. So much of politics is done simply by numbers. And make a point of talking to your government's representatives while you're there. Very simple, but people don't often do that. So make a point of seeking them out, and that again, that's the point of the value of having your photo ID little schedule of people that you want to be able to identify and connect with. Another way to be effective is to follow the development of the draft documents, and I'll go more into the brackets and terms segment here, which I touched on in our last lesson, but it's important to follow the draft documents. That way, you are far more connected with the process. You then become, even in the days and weeks and months to come, you become more of an expert in understanding the dynamics of what was taking place. You better understand the underbelly of what's going on between the member states and what some of the challenges, the sticking points, the strengths, who are some of the allies on that issue amongst the governments, and that helps you be better informed as to how to proceed as you meet in the hallways and conference rooms with other governmental representatives. You can choose to target other key governments that tend to act individually if you want to persuade them to your issue or side. Again, they are the main ones there, but there are others there too. If your government works in a block, and you know that you want to connect with your government on a particular issue if you're lobbying, then you got to remember that you also need to deal with more than your own government if, in fact, they act as a bloc. So at least you don't get surprised if, in fact, you persuaded your government. But because on this issue they work in a bloc with a number of other governments, if you didn't put the time into dealing with those other governments as well, even though your government seemed like they were going to go your way, in the end they may not. So this, again, adds to the information that you need to be able to be effective on your issues at the UN. Know the value of informal contacts, and don't forget to talk to people in the coffee shops, delegates' lounge, delegates' dining room, corridors, the back of meeting rooms, in the missions, in the hotels, etc. Just remember that all of those people are people too. Invite them for a cup of coffee. You know, if you're traveling, try to stay in the hotels where other conference delegates are staying. That gives you more of those informal opportunities to meet and connect. Oftentimes people will say, make sure you bring plenty of cards and give them out. Yes, you sometimes really do need to have your own cards, especially for people that if you're being a presenter and people may want to get your information from you. But I would say more important it is to ask for other people's cards. Make sure that you get their email, and at the end of the day, send them a quick email to connect with your information. It's more important that you have their information than it is that they have yours if you have very specific objectives. Sometimes, of course, it's nice if other people do have your contact information, but it's more important for you to have theirs. Do ask people for coffee or tea, remembering that they're individuals as well as officials. Make friendships as well as lobbying partners. Governments also often want to know what NGOs are thinking. Help them out with this. Let them know. Just be a source of information. And make sure that you have your corridor brief on this issue, not just on your NGO, but on this issue worked out well in advance, so you can give them very simply, very clearly, in a short space of time, because the corridors of these conferences are just the same as the corridors at the United Nations. Diplomats are always looking for their key targets. You're not the only one there armed with pictures of people that you want to meet. So is almost everybody else. They are there to meet other people. And just because you're in front of them doesn't mean to say they're going to stop looking for other people. So if you have found them and you have them right in front of you, this may be your only chance. Don't blow it. This is your perfect moment to use your perfectly prepared corridor brief. Having gone through your Vienna Cafe conversation and preparing your corridor brief. You will know what I'm referring to when I say corridor brief or Vienna Cafe conversation if you had done the Express course before you signed up for this program, but upon thinking about it, you may not have done that, so I will make sure that you know where these are, and we will go over some of the elements at a later date. I will go back into those in another session, but I cannot underscore enough that you do go back and listen to those. The Express short course content is absolutely important and valuable for you to do. So please go and do that again. Make sure that you've got your corridor brief on this issue well worked out. Now I'm going to jump over to understanding brackets. The brackets that we're talking about here are those in the draft versions of the outcome documents. As people sit around the table debating the issue of what should be in the outcome document for a particular conference or convention or committee meeting, people will agree on a lot of the wording, but there'll be sticking points or points, all different other kind of points where they haven't agreed on the exact verbiage. And the brackets are what they use to indicate what is not yet agreed upon. Some will be there because they haven't finally agreed on the numbers. For example, you just saw either 2 degrees centigrade difference or 1.5 degrees difference, or whether they're going to make it a 50 or 85 or a 95 percentile difference. So they're just bracketing alternatives, and people haven't yet weighed out which ones are the best for this outcome document yet. There would be brackets that are pretty much there because it's a contentious issue. And on some of those topics, they will be the key sticking point. Some governments will be pushing, will have those brackets as something they absolutely will not give way on at all, period. And they will also be the target brackets that a particular lobbying group will be focusing on. Then how that all gets dealt with will depend very much on the individuals that are there, the coalition of organizations and governments that are there, what is at stake, and more. But there are contentious brackets. Sometimes some brackets will end up in a resolution because delegates are suspicious about either the scientific validity of those numbers or the reason why others are insisting on particular phrases to be in there. And they'll push back by not agreeing, not reaching consensus in the negotiations. So then that word or phrase ends up in brackets. And primarily it can be because of suspicions rather than anything confirmed at that point. Some are tactical or trading brackets. And part of that somebody will put in a bracket, not because they really need it, but because they know that that's going to be, tactically, it's going to be smart for them to have something that they can trade with another country. I'll give you this if you give me that. That can be one of the ways that they can work on getting things into the resolution indirectly that they may want or feel is very important. And that particular bracket may not be the real agenda that they have, but it's something that they're using as a tactic or in order to trade. There are some just simply uncertain, some that are waiting for further information that needs to come back, that people are genuinely getting information about, a day, a date, scientific information that does have to actually come in before that bracket can be removed. And there are some that are what are called weary brackets, simply because some of the negotiations go way into the early morning hours and people just get bad at negotiating at that time. They're just plain weary, so the best that they can do is put something in there as a placeholder to which they will come back to the next day. And the point is about all of these brackets. They're not labeled alternative brackets or contentious brackets or tactical or trading brackets. They all look the same. So you can't absolutely know unless you're watching all of the process going on, and in some cases, unless you know the inner mind of those people or the nations that are insisting on those brackets. They all look the same, no matter what the reasons are for them being there. So that just adds to the excitement of the whole process of drafting and coming to consensus. Other considerations, just very quickly. Are you going there? You want to be a lobbyist or you want to be an activist? You will have, again, very different tactics. Just like if you're going to vote or if you're going to create consensus, you've got very different tactics for how you're going to go about doing your lobbying work. If you want to be a lobbyist and work with other people and develop long-term relationships, if that's your goal, then you will work one way. If you want to get, your point across at any price, then that's another way that you will work. Are you going there to learn or to impact the meeting? Is this commission something that you absolutely have a specific agenda for, or do you have a long-term concern? Are you active in the NGO issue caucus and stakeholders group, or are you going there as an individual or as an individual expert? All of these things make a difference. Do you want to involve the media? Are you going there to stir up the media or are you not? Do you want the media to pay attention to this issue? Sometimes some issues are better off being under the radar than others. You may have very different and varied strategies for your work there. So we've been through quite a bit already, and I'm going to try to keep this homework simple and to the point. Do you plan to attend a UN conference or other intergovernmental conference in the near future? If so, I want you to write down some of the things that you plan to better prepare for this event based on some of the ideas or thoughts that were jogged as we went through this particular lesson. So jot down some of the things that you felt could be good to do or you might consider for the next one. Next, I want you to put those actions that you wrote down into your scheduler now. If it was research, if it was plan to get the pictures, if it was have a meeting with your NGO to decide which strategy or tactic that you would have, plan to write your letter, plan to communicate, plan to do something about your email, but put something, some action right now into your scheduler, and already you will be making a difference as a consequence of what you learned today. I look forward to seeing you in the next module, module 4.